Good morning. 5 minutes past the hour. It's Tuesday, October 5th, day 4560 of the morning show with Preston Scott. That is Grant Allen there in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B. It is Spark Week. Helping out our friends at Teen Challenge. Go to TallahasseeMensRehab.org. Or is it .com? It's .com. Find out more on ways you can help. Really excited to hear some of the things that are happening on that front. But we'll get to that in the course of the program today. Lots of great guests. We'll hear from Leonard Hamilton, FSU men's basketball coach. Fascinating visit I had with Coach Hamilton last week about his world, his life. We've got the GOAT, Ricky Carmichael. When you hear some of his accomplishments, I didn't realize, I knew he was the best, but sometimes quantifying it can be a little sketchy. Not in his case. Ricky Carmichael will join us in the second hour of the program. We'll be joined by Mary Peter with K9 Partners for Patriots. She'll join us in hour number three. The amazing growth of that program that is helping veterans across the country. And Scott Stripling, he is a biblical archaeologist. He'll join us this morning as well. Speaking of, our verse of the day, Isaiah 55:6, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Great way to start the day. Spark Week on the morning show with Preston Scott.
In this time of desperation, when all we know is doubt and fear, there is only one salvation we believe. We believe in this broken generation, when all is dark, you help us see. There is only one foundation. We believe. We believe. We believe in God the Father. We believe in Jesus Christ. We believe in the Holy Spirit. He's given us new life. We believe in the crucifixion. We believe that he conquered death. We believe in the resurrection. And he's coming back again. We believe.
Christ, we believe in the hope. Holy Spirit.
Got you covered. Traffic and weather every 10 minutes. It's the morning show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
In advance of the inevitable email, that was the Newsboys, Michael Tate singing lead, formerly of DC Talk. And We Believe. Great song. Inside the American Patriots Almanac, we have October the 5th opened up. It is the birthday of Jonathan Edwards. Born in 1703 in East Windsor, Connecticut. Why do we make the C's silent? Connecticut.
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy.
It's just one of those things. The congregational minister's preaching and writing made him one of the most important figures in colonial America. His famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, threatened doom for the unrepentant. The God that holds you over the pit of hell, much as one holds a spider or some loathsome insect over the fire, abhors you and is dreadfully provoked. But he also emphasized the transforming power of Christ's love. Christ has flung the door of mercy wide open and stands in the door calling. Whew. Thank goodness for that. That first line will bring sweat to your upper lip, man. That second one helps. Edwards became an influential voice in the Great Awakening, the religious revival that swept through the colonies in the 1730s and 40s. Fascinating figure of history, Jonathan Edwards. He was sort of the front runner of a series of ministers that really got after it. You got George Whitefield. Whitefield is the pronunciation how it's spelled, from England. Attracted huge audiences. Many established religious authorities, including the Church of England, rejected these types of gatherings. Thousands of Americans listened spellbound. Even Ben Franklin, a genial skeptic, was moved. It was wonderful to see the change soon made in the manner of our inhabitants. One could not walk through the town in an evening without hearing psalms sung in different families of every street. Those are the words of Ben Franklin. The Great Awakening was a religious movement, but ultimately affected the politics of the era. It was the first truly mass movement in America, helping the colonists find a common identity. Many preachers emphasized democratic theories, such as that all people stand equal in the eyes of God, and the churches should be run by people, not kings or bishops. What a noteworthy idea that was. See, that's what was the basis of Jefferson writing in a private letter about the separation of church and state. See, what else do we have on this date? 1829, Chester Arthur, 21st president, born in Fairfield, Vermont. 1931, Clyde Pangborn and Hugh Herndon land in Wenatchee, Washington, to complete the first nonstop flight across the Pacific, having flown from Japan. I can't imagine what that would have been like. Flying across the Pacific, or the Atlantic for that matter, and I mean, just water. Just
endless.
And limited instrumentation to tell you whether you're going the right way or not.
Yeah.
Now I understand. You know, we were using the sun and the stars to navigate on ships for years. I'm sorry, it's a little different up there. Just is. And in 1947, the first televised White House address, President Truman urges Americans to conserve meat and poultry and to help save grain for a hungry Europe. 16 minutes after the hour. Come back, talk about doorbell cameras on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
WFLA at WFLAFM.com, on your phone with the iHeartRadio app, and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos, and iHeart's radio station.
Show with Preston Scott. Good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Spark Week, just kind of giving us a little space. The world is swirling around us. It is breathtaking, the things that are happening around us each and every day, and it'll all be there waiting for us next week. Of course, we're keeping you up to date with news at the top and bottom of the hour, keeping the DeSantis family in our thoughts and prayers. No doubt, this is This must be a very difficult time for the governor and the first lady of the state, and so we're thinking of them right now. The yesterday I made some comments about how Teen Challenge does what it does, and I upset somebody who wrote me saying that they are an alcoholic and have been for I think 13 years. And I understand that there is maybe that's what's the prevailing thought of a lot of the 12-step programs is you once, you know, you've got this issue and you will always have this issue. And I just, my biblical worldview doesn't allow me to see things that way. That would be like saying that somebody who committed a petty theft when they were a kid is still a thief. No, they used to be. But it's a difference in worldview, I guess, a philosophical view. You have your choice to look at things the way you will. Teen Challenge is more successful than any 12-step program in the world for one simple reason, and I believe it's because of the power of God to say you used to be. I mean, whom the sun sets free is free indeed. And there is therefore no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. I mean, I could go on and on with scriptural references about the truth of what God says about our shortcomings, because we all fall short. Everybody makes mistakes. And that's the beauty of what Teen Challenge does. They offer guys hope. And it works. You know, there are certainly things you have to conquer and deal with. But to me, it's a ball and chain to keep saying you're something that you used to be. But that's just me. That's my view. But if you want to help out, again, TallahasseeMensRehab.com. There's a little thing there on the Spark Week Challenge. Take a look. I don't know about you, but there are some doorbell cameras that catch things that are absolutely hilarious. I have seen videos. My favorite so far, and now this one's good that I'm going to talk about, but my favorite so far is the dog that disappeared and came back to the house and couldn't get in, so he rang the doorbell.
You see his little nose?
Yeah.
Just right at the door, and he's just
Hello?
Poking it with his nose.
And no one ever showed him what to do. He just figured it out. Now comes a squirrel. Homeowners in Oklahoma, out of town, Dakota Anglin, or away from work, at work. And the 30-second clip, squirrel gets right in the camera. Caught sort of snooping around the house, but then comes to the doorbell camera. And, I mean, right there and then rings the doorbell. continuing the search around the front yard. Husband and wife get a notification. Someone's at the front door. And they see the squirrel. Nosing around. I mean, the close-up of an animal and its nose into a camera is just funny.
It is.
Have you seen, what's the strangest thing you've seen on a doorbell camera?
Nothing weird. I'm trying to think. Maybe some guy who was biking and then just wiped out. Or something, and it looked like an America's Funniest Home Videos kind of blooper, but nothing, I don't have any critters that came right up to the door and stared in.
Well, I was fortunate that my doorbell camera was able to help me settle a claim on a package that wasn't delivered.
Oh, that's pretty crazy.
It was delivered, but the one packet, there were two packages that the UPS guy brought, and he's awesome. I know him. And you know, he had a two packages, and the second package just sliding all over the place on the, so clearly nothing was in it. And so I got an empty box is the
oh, wow,
the short version of the story. And that video was crucial to helping us kind of piece together what happened. And so the theory is that someone along the line relieved the package of its contents. And, you know, it was just placed on top with everything else. And, you know, this guy's delivering 1,000 packages a day. What
he doesn't
he
pay
know,
attention
you know
I mean? To one individual
and,
thing.
And the one he's carrying is so heavy. He, you know, it wouldn't, you know.
It was,
he didn't
deceptive.
Notice.
It was deceptive, yeah, where the weight was distributed.
Absolutely. But doorbell cameras, man, they're incredible. Hey, when we come back, determination and innovation come together here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
It's going to be legend. Wait for it. Dairy. Legendary.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
All right. Confession time here, that's going to set up the next segment. I was supposed to do an interview yesterday late afternoon with Chris Gardner. And because it was so late in the day compared to my normal schedule, and the fact that I was away from my phone, I did not get my reminder notice, and I blew it. So, we're going to have Chris on in perhaps a week or two. He will be back on, he will be on the program. But I was, you know, obviously the story of Chris Gardner is a remarkable story. If you've ever seen the movie Pursuit of Happiness, you get the gist of the Chris Gardner story. It's not 100% accurate. For example, when the character of Chris Gardner, who's a real person, is portrayed by Will Smith, he's with his young son at the age of 4 or 5, homeless, in a bathroom in New York or wherever. And it's kind of a horrifying thing. In reality, Chris's son was 18 months old and he was going through that. It's an amazing story. And he's asked by an interviewer, if you're going to speak to somebody that's trying to reboot their life, what would you say to them? And he said the C5 complex. Have a plan. He said everybody has a dream, but few have a plan. He said the C5 complex is clear, concise, compelling, consistent, and committed. That's the key to a plan. Is that it fits all of those things, that your plan is clear, concise, compelling, consistent, and committed. Now, I say that as a precursor to this story because there are a lot of elements to that inside of some things that we'll talk about over the next couple days. I've never heard of Project Airtime. Project Airtime came about when a guy named Chris Santacroce was injured in an accident. He's a paraglider. And he found himself in a wheelchair and it changed his life. About 10 years ago, he had a spinal cord injury doing a trick, put him in a wheelchair, and he came out of that wheelchair with a very different perspective. And so he founded an organization while continuing to fly professionally and give lessons and bring others on flights, and it's called Project Airtime. And what he does is he helps people that are paralyzed or with special needs, and he gets them up in the air. And some of them, a lot of them, are veterans. And it's a really cool story of not staying in your chair if you are in that situation where you're bound by a wheelchair, of pushing, of saying, I can find things where I can be independent. And interesting to me is, here's a guy who got a taste of it and said, I can do something to help others who are permanently in this chair. It's amazing how events in life can shape your thinking and cause you to change your trajectory to help others. I'm always fascinated by those stories. It's the Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Someone has to say it. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
One of the veterans in this particular story, Brendan Doyle, spent 9 years in the U.S. Army in 2020. He was left paralyzed from the waist down after a landing accident. 7 months later, he started flying with Chris and his team. Spent the last several months kind of preparing to fly on his own. He said, look, flying in tandem is cool, but I wanted to do more. And so he began training to fly on his own. He said, when I got injured, a lot of my independence was stripped from me. To be able to do things I love myself is way better than just being along for the ride. And so they've got a special kind of, I guess, tricycle type seat put together, wheel on the front, two in the back, and then the paraglider is attached to it. They wait for the right winds, and off they go. And he gets to fly it by himself. He's been training, and it's pretty cool. I love stories of overcoming. I love stories of people that just find a way to just kind of reorient their life. For example, there's a family, the Akpan family, A-K-P-A-N, Karen and her husband Sylvester. They got tired of the high cost of living in California, being in debt. She was done. She was the impetus behind the plan. And so just before the pandemic hit, they sold their home. And took their son and moved into a renovated trailer. Big, long trailer. Could be towed by a truck. And started to pay down debt. And so far, they have paid off $200,000 in debt, half of which was a student loan. Quoting her, we were just sick and tired of being sick and tired of all the bills, living in California, barely scraping by. We wanted to do something different for our son. First of all, to pay off all of our debt, then create generational wealth, then just spend more time together, which is so important to us because we feel like life is too short. And what matters the most is just being around the people that you love. And talking about their debt, she said, it sounds scary when you say that, to be honest, because we shouldn't have been in that much debt in the first place. It was absolutely nuts. They have a little more credit card debt they're working to pay off. Very, very little, she says. We're at the tail end of it. They started their own Roth IRAs. They put aside money for their son's education account. They homeschool him because they travel all the time. They have jobs, apparently, that allow them to work remotely. And so they're just constantly on the road, traveling. They even travel internationally.
If you can make that work and you don't get sick of each other, or if you're not too uncomfortable being in a trailer, if you can make that work, that could be pretty cool.
Well, and obviously it's, and when I say it's a big trailer, it's a big trailer.
Really?
You know, it looks to me like it's a good 40 footer or so.
So they got space.
Well, I mean, it's a tiny home plus.
They can lay down and stretch their legs.
Yeah. They've each got their own space. There's no doubt about that.
Wow.
But again, they just looked around and they said, okay, there is a different way of going about doing this. And I admire that. She's got a blog called The Mom Trotter, if you're interested in following along their adventures and her thoughts on things. She said, I'm not going back to a monthly mortgage. If we ever do live in a house, I always say, we're buying cash. I can't go back to monthly payments. I can't. I can afford more vacations that are not strictly budget, where I'm counting pennies everywhere I go. So living in a house would take that away from us again. There you go. 46 minutes past the hour. My visit with Coach Leonard Hamilton comes up at the top of the hour in the morning show with Preston Scott.
Tall? The morning show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
We are trying to help out Teen Challenge. Teen Challenge helps men who want to get off their addictions to drugs, alcohol, prescription meds. These are guys that have made that choice. We're not trying to help fund the program. They do that, and they don't turn people away due to inability to pay or to fund their treatment. They've got that covered. They have expenses to help repair the building that the guys live in and the treatment center. Long story short, flooding. And they're getting some expert help, but we need to help raise some funds. And so anything you can do to help them with that, and we'll talk more about that specifically on Friday with a couple of the guys, with Austin and Kyle from Teen Challenge. Just go to TallahasseeMensRehab.com, TallahasseeMensRehab.com, and look for the Spark Week Challenge. And whatever God lays on your heart, and maybe you're in the business, they break down the needs, maybe you can kind of help out. We've got one businessman in town that I know of that went out there and met with them yesterday already, looking at ways to help them with what he does professionally. And so we'll get to all that and unpack it all. But if you want to give and join my wife and I in supporting their efforts, we just hope to jumpstart the effort to get these repairs done. And again, that's our October giving challenge, the Spark Week Challenge, TallahasseeMensRehab.com. Earlier, we talked about squirrels. Now, I have put on my blog page on two occasions the efforts of Mark Rober to foil squirrels. Let me just be very, very clear. There is nothing you can do to stop a squirrel that wants whatever it wants to get in your bird feeder. It will find a way. Yes, you can develop some things like, you know, the razor wire approach. Can't do that. I can't do that to an animal. You can put the slinkies underneath. It might work for a little while, but eventually they're going to win the day. Mark Rober is a genius engineer, and he took on the challenge of the squirrels in his backyard, and it's hilarious. If you go to his YouTube channel, Mark Rober, it's just as it sounds, R-O-B-E-R. First, he's a delightful young guy, but he's wicked smart. He's the developer of the glitter bomb that foils porch pirates. And now he's been working with another guy who deals with phone scammers. And they've been developing things to capture and catch bad guys that are scamming primarily senior adults. But he takes on and he does stuff online that's just phenomenal. And his efforts at foiling squirrels is just second to none. But the lead researcher of the morning show came up with this story yesterday. Guy's away. He's doing insurance sales. He's away for days at a time. Came back to his home in Fargo, North Dakota, and discovered a little bit of excess cargo in his Chevrolet Avalanche pickup truck, but not in the bed. 175 pounds of black walnuts were stashed under the hood. And there are pictures of at least four bushels and more to cut that he can't get to.
Oh my gosh.
Stashed inside. He's tried everything, but they still find a way. Time for news. Welcome to hour number two of the morning show with Preston Scott. Tuesday, October 5th, show 4560. Grant Allen over there in Studio 1A. I am here in Studio 1B. I'm Preston. Great to be with you. Spark Week, day number two. And in this half hour, I'm going to share an interview I did last week with FSU men's basketball coach Leonard Hamilton. We did not talk a whole lot about basketball per se. The team this year, there will be time for that later. He has built Florida State into one of the top basketball programs in the country consistently now, year in and year out. And I think you'll find this visit to be really insightful about the guy who has decided to make Florida State his likely final stop as a coach. Joining me on the program is the head coach of the FSU men's basketball team, the one, the only Leonard Hamilton. Coach, how are you, sir?
I'm doing this fine, my friend. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I thought it would be fun. We're doing a special week where we just sort of push away from all the news, all the noise. And you and I were just talking about how challenging the last couple of years have been, in particular, trying to keep not just yourself but everything around you and the basketball program healthy. And that is no small task. But I wanted to get away from all of that for just a few minutes and talk a little bit about your life, Coach. Your career has been really remarkable. And I'd like to just start with, where does it begin for you? Where did the path into basketball and coaching in particular begin to show up in your life?
Well, growing up as a kid in a poverty-stricken community like Gastonia, North Carolina, textile industrial incorporated area where we were one of the largest textile industrial areas in the world, everyone could get a job, but we couldn't make any money. You know, so it was just, you know, it's what it was. But so it became obvious to me that because of my parents' lack of education, and they had a ceiling on what they could do and how they could provide for their family. And they always encouraged me that in order to combat that, I had to get my education. But they made it very clear that they had absolutely no money to contribute to my education, that I had to figure out a way how to earn my education either through academics or through athletics. Well, you know, I've been accused of a lot of things, but nobody has ever accused me of being a scholar. So my plan B was, you know, to try to get an athletic scholarship. So I played football and basketball, and I actually had more football scholarships than basketball scholarships. But to be very honest with you, I've always just felt, when I look back at my career, that my steps have always been ordered by the Lord, because anytime I tried to do something that I wasn't supposed to do, it just seemed like I got shot right back into the path that I think has led me to this point in my life. I actually had intended to play college football, but as faith would have it, I came down with an illness, a minor illness, or some type of breakout and rash that I couldn't report to football camp. But that was the best thing ever happened to me. not going to college on a football scholarship. Then I was going to join the Army, and I was a couple of weeks from joining the Army, and as faith would have it, the community college in my hometown decided to start a basketball program. So there I was, you know, a couple of weeks from joining the Army, and they hired a coach who was running around the community trying to find local kids that played basketball, and he targeted me as a guy who could come in and help him build his program. Well, instead of going to the Army, I ended up going to Gaston Community College to play basketball. I felt that in order to get my education, if I went to the Army, I would get a GI Bill that would pay for my education. So that was my plan. But so I ended up going to Gaston Community College and ended up scoring 54 points in one game. And so a lot of schools started looking at me. And I ended up going to UT Martin, not knowing that I would be the first black athlete to go to the school. They had no idea. I was going to be integrating the situation. And that was somewhat challenging, but I thought that I was prepared to do that. So I'm happy that my journey has been ordered by the man upstairs, Lord. And I feel like on my journey that I'm doing, fulfilling the purpose that God has for me on this earth.
I am fair. I am good. I'm a happy example.
Glenn is on 9 to noon.
I am stronger every day
on WFLA.
Minutes past the hour. Continuing my discussion last week with FSU men's basketball coach Leonard Hamilton. And we got to talking about his family a little bit more and the impact his parents had on his life.
My father gave me two tidbits. He said, don't let anybody ever outwork you. Now, you know, I didn't know at the time how significant that lesson was. As a fourth grader, outside with your father saying, you don't ever let anybody outwork you. And he ingrained that in me so much. But he said, your supervisor, your coach, your boss, they might make a mistake in how they evaluate you, so you control your own destiny. And the second thing he said, don't ever come to me making an excuse. In other words, don't ever let anybody outwork you, and don't use anything as an excuse. He says, because you control your own destiny. And when you start making excuses, that means you're giving yourself a reason, you know, to not give it all you have. So those two things, I think, has really carved out a path for me mentally and emotionally that I always felt that I had to earn everything and I always had to work. One thing I could control was how hard I work, and then don't make any excuses if you're not successful, because you're responsible for the outcome.
Have you ever given any moment of time or thought to, if you hadn't become a basketball coach, what you would have done?
Well, it's funny you asked me that, because, you know, I tried to get out of coaching once, personally. I was at Austin Peay, my first job, and I was fortunate enough, I thought, at least people on a national basis thought that Austin Peay coming from last to first with the players that I was able to bring in when I was only 23 years old. I really didn't know what I was doing other than just working hard. That at 26, I thought I was confident enough to thought I was supposed to be the next head coach at Austin Peay. My head coach was starting to get mentioned for a lot of jobs. And so I had a good relationship with the president, and I walked into his office and asked him, you know, if my coach, Lake Kelly, with the success that he's had, if he gets another head job, am I going to be the next head coach at Austin Peay? Well, what would cause me at 26 to think that I'm supposed to be the next coach? And when I look around the country, there were very few African-American head coaches, period. But I thought I was supposed to be the next head coach. I was just that confident.
Mm-hmm.
And when he told me, he said, Leonard, nothing would make me happier than for you to be the head coach at Austin Peay. He said, but I'm retiring in 2 years, and I'm not real sure I'm strong enough for you to be the first African-American coach at a school and in our conference. Well, being a confident, aggressive, hardworking guy, that hurt me. It hurt me to no end. I mean, every time I talk about it, the pain makes me emotional to think about that day. That was on a Wednesday. I resigned my job on Thursday. I moved out of my house on Friday and took a job with Dow Chemical in Charlotte, North Carolina. Because I said to myself, if I can't be a head basketball coach in a profession that I've worked hard in, then what I have to do is take a job in something that maybe I can succeed in, like sales, and maybe I will receive benefits in relation to how well I contribute. Well, I went to work on Monday morning at Dow Chemical in Charlotte, North Carolina. But now, as fate would have it, once again, at noon, when I left the job to go look for an apartment, the head coach of the University of Kentucky had called my hotel and left a message for me with my wife for me to call him. When I called him, he asked me, would I be interested in considering the assistant coaching position at the University of Kentucky. So now I go from being emotional, distraught, trying to get out of coaching, to the number one, the winning program in the history of college basketball, called him. And now, that didn't have anything to do with me. That was just God's faith on my life. That's the pattern that's set for me. So I go from being angry and upset that I couldn't be a head coach because I was black to the number one program in the history of college basketball calling me and asked me to come in for an interview. So that's kind of the way my life has gone.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
And free.
And iHeart's radio station.
Minutes past the hour, the morning show with Preston Scott. Final segment here, my interview last week with FSU men's basketball coach Leonard Hamilton. Fascinating guy. And we talked about, with his length of time in the world of college basketball, how different it is coaching today from years gone by. When you meet with kids today, how different is it from when you first started in as a head coach? I'll compare rather than apples and oranges. Let's go apples and apples. When you were first the head coach and how you approached a young person, how you approached their family to get them to come play for you, how different are kids now versus then?
Well, I'm not real sure it's that much difference. You have a more distraction because of social media, but I've always had the responsibility of taking over programs that need to be built. I mean, at Oklahoma State, they hadn't been in the postseason tournament in 27 years, and Miami hadn't been in the NCAA tournament since 1962, and Florida State had been a little inconsistent. You know, so the programs that I've been in have all been building-type programs, so my story basically has always been the same. I was fortunate enough to be a part of building it at Austin Peay. And then one of the things that happened at Austin Peay is that the full-time assistant coach became ill in January and had to resign. So there I was as a graduate student my first year out of college with all the responsibilities of a head coach. So I go from a building situation to the number one program in the history of college, women's program in the history of college basketball. So I started building, and then I learned what it's like to be at the top. And so when my opportunity came to start working with a program that needed to be built, I thought I was prepared. And so talking to youngsters about, you know, being a part of making a difference. Some guys like to go to schools and be a part of building, of success that was already established. Some kids like being a part of going and making a difference. Secondly, I think I've always tried to be honest with people. I always try to be honest and develop a personal relationship where that I try to just let everyone know I understand, you know, what they're trying to do and where they're trying to go. And that I've been down this road, and that I think I'm equipped to help them realize their dream of moving on and being successful in basketball. So I also think that I've had this impetus of wanting to get my education. And so I make it very clear to them that you know, everyone wants to be in the NBA, but, you know, it's important that you prepare yourself and have a plan A and a plan B.
What's curious to me, Leonard, is that your career has been built around building. Now at Florida State, though, it's been built. I mean, I'll coin even a newer term than what was thrown around the last couple of years, the new bloods. Now Florida State is the new blue blood. I mean, Florida State now is a basketball school. You know what you faced when you came here. It was a football school, and now it's a basketball school. What has prompted you to not want to start building another program somewhere and to stay and maintain and even continue to build on what you did build here?
Gosh, I feel like we're just getting started. We have a lot more work to do. I think our goals are still very high. I think we've made some accomplishments in an unbelievable conference, but we still, you know, are new blood in the ACC. The ACC is the number one basketball conference ever assembled in the history of college basketball, with all the Hall of Fame coaches and all the national titles and all the rich tradition that exists in the ACC. We are long ways away from being considered one of those types of programs. I mean, on the court, yeah, we've been extremely competitive, but we still have a lot of ways to go, and we still have a lot to accomplish. So we still on the grind. You know, we still have more championships to win. We have not been to the Final Four. We want to win a national title. Every coach in America starts off wanting to win the national title. In college basketball, only one guy can stand up with his finger up and say we're number one. In football, you have a lot of different votes, so there's a chance for a lot of guys to win their last game. In Division I basketball, there's only one guy who's going to stand up with the finger on and cut the nest down and say they're number one. And until you do that, you're always chasing it.
There you go, always chasing it. Leonard Hambledon, hope you enjoyed that visit. I thought it was fascinating. Some of the insights into the head coach of Florida State basketball. When we come back, he's the GOAT. Ricky Carmichael will join us next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
You don't have to love him, just like him on Facebook at Preston Scott Show.
Minutes after the hour, it is hour number two. Morning show with Preston Scott. You know what they say, first 5 minutes, second half, crucial to the outcome of the game, so I brought in the best. You know, I was thinking, Ricky Carmichael joins us, and referred to as the GOAT in the world of motocross. I was trying to think, could I even jokingly call myself the best ever at anything? Yeah, no.
Well,
how are you?
I'm great. Glad to be in here. Thanks for having me in. I love Spark Week. That was an incredible story with Coach Hambledon, by the way. Love his wherewithal to know that, hey, I'm going to have to do this. He realized at a young age, like, it's this or this, you know, and to have that. And I don't think there's no rhyme or reason of how he learned that. I think it was just a God-given talent, and it was something that he had.
I mean, Dad didn't have much to give other than love and saying, here's two pieces of advice.
The things that matter, right?
Yeah.
The same with me. Like, people say, man, what was it? And I'm like, I had the ability, I don't know how, but I realized at a very young age that if I didn't make it at this, I don't know what I'd be able to do. But I realized the sacrifices that my parents were making for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I had no other choice but to make it here and make it in motorcycle racing. And luckily it worked out, you know, and here we are today. So but I don't know how I realized that at 12 years old.
Yeah, but come on now, Ricky. Now, and we're going to get to some other things. He's spending the half hour with me. Grant doesn't know this stuff. In 1996, when you finished up your amateur career, you had 67 national championships in motocross.
Yeah, as an amateur, it was... I was fortunate, man. Like,
dude, I had 67 Hot Wheels cars.
I don't know. Like, I racing was life. We raced every single weekend, and wherever the competition was, that's where we were traveling to. And that was life. I didn't do anything. Didn't do any proms. Didn't go out. I mean, racing was life. Every single weekend, like my mates at school are like, "Hey, what you doing this weekend? Going racing. Where are you going this weekend?" Just depending.
Did
on
they
where
stop
the race
asking
was.
After a while?
Oh yeah, 100%. Especially the older I got, like when I got into high school. Like, where you go? You're not coming out with us this weekend. I'm like, no, I'm going here. We're out of here on Friday.
did they just have to tell you stories about what they did?
Yeah, pretty much. You'd figure it out because we didn't have social media back then. So, yeah.
By the way, Ricky, this was the 4 years of high school you missed.
Yeah. Right. I had a very, very successful amateur career.
Well, and let's just hold on now. I'm going to pick 1 year, 2002. Mm. You're doing the AMA 250cc National Motocross brackets, yep. And there were 24 races. Ricky Carmichael won 24 races. You were 24 for 24, yeah. And you did it again 2 years later.
I did. It was an incredible feat. It sure was. But the crazy thing was, is 2004, when I was able to repeat that, I was just coming off an ACL repair. And, I took the early part of the season off, Supercross season, which we race in stadiums.
Yeah.
And I came out and, was able to go 24-0. They called me Seabiscuit. I had Seabiscuit on the back of my pants because they thought I was washed up. So
yep. And I know the story of Seabiscuit. I know it well. Lauren Hillebrand. Did your competitors want to slash your tires? No, I'm serious.
Probably.
I mean, 24 for 24. You didn't lose.
Yeah, probably. I mean, at a certain stage, it's like, all right, enough's enough. We got to take this guy down somewhere.
I would have cut the tires. I would have done anything possible. Ricky Carmichael with me this half hour here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
It's over, Anakin! I have the high ground!
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
41 minutes after the hour, it's The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Spark Week, where we just push away from all the noise and talk about other things, try to help Teen Challenge here this year. If you go to TallahasseeMensRehab.com, and you'll find the Spark Week Challenge there. And look at it, pray about it, think about it. If you can make a difference, cool. That'd be great because they have a need, and I think we can help. Ricky Carmichael joining us. And, Ricky, you and I have talked most every year for the last few years.
That's right.
Near the start of the school year because where did the bullying cause kind of start for you? Because you've really been focused on speaking out against bullying.
Yeah, that's right. So... I'm a ginger, so right there I was already made fun of as a young kid going up through school. And so now with social media, and it really started to stem from that, just the amount of negativity and comments that one can get, I started thinking, like, man, we need to try to do the best that we can to stop this. And then, of course, I have two kids, twin boy, girl, and it's important to me. But the social media thing, I want to talk about that just a little bit. Like, parents, if you're not engaged in social media, And for the record, I probably would never use social media if it wasn't a source of how I do my work.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things are required via social media. But you have to be engaged so you know what's happening and you know how to, you know, basically see what your kids are doing. And these people, I call them keyboard warriors. They will get in there and they will tear these kids apart. And so I just want to bring, I just want to bring it to the surface for the children or the parents to keep an eye on things because people are tough behind these little screens and
on social media
and words hurt people. And I absolutely can't stand that part about social media. And I just want to bring awareness to it. Everybody in the community, everybody in the country, everybody that things happen and words hurt people.
You know, in my line of work, I've learned over the years the difference between our iconic memory and our echoic memory, the things that come in through our eyes versus the things we hear. The things we hear rattle around in our brain 3 to 4 times longer. That's why we know lyrics to songs we never planned on memorizing.
Yeah.
Kids read that stuff, but they repeat it to themselves.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go away.
It doesn't. And, you know, like I hate sometimes when I see negative comments on my posts because my kids, they look at social media.
Sure.
And whether it's after a broadcast, I mean, people.
Because you're working for NBC Sports.
I'm an analyst for NBC Sports and for Monster Energy Supercross Series. So, if, you know, I'm not perfect in the broadcast booth, but my point and what I'm about to tell you is there's so much negativity on social media. I feel like it's probably a 60-40 split, 60 to the negative side. It's like people they can't help themselves from not being negative. It's always they want to throw shade and be negative towards somebody else rather than positive about, hey, man, that was a really good race call that you did. It's always why you got to bring out the negative.
Right.
I'm not sitting here claiming I'm perfect, but anyhow, I don't want my children seeing that. So you can only imagine what people and the growing up are and kids are doing to other kids via social media.
Right.
I mean, if they're doing it right here in the open where people can read my comments, imagine what they're doing in private and direct messages. So.
And you've got a few followers too.
To a million on close to a million on Instagram. I think we're well over a million on Facebook. So social media,
and
wise,
it's a love hate thing.
Yeah,
you hate it.
Yeah, I mean, like I told you, I wouldn't be on it if it wasn't for work for me. When Instagram was down yesterday, I had like a day off. It was nice.
But the plus of that is the opportunity to move the needle on an issue like bullying, where those that follow you get to think about what you're saying on the subject.
100%. It's a lot easier to be nice than it is to be negative, and you feel so much better about yourself when you're being positive.
Ricky Carmichael with me, another segment coming up on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
You're there quickly and safely. Traffic and weather on the 10s. It's The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
51 minutes after the hour, The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Mary Peter, founder of K9 Partners for Patriots, next hour. Amazing organization. See what God's done in growing that over the last few years, helping so many veterans through their relationships with dogs that are service animals in their lives. It's a cool story. Mary's going to join us, and much, much more to come this week on Spark Week. But I'm joined by, he is the best ever in the sport of motocross, Ricky Carmichael. And how many events are you covering for NBC?
So we do 17 Supercrosses. We start in January 8th. We race live every Saturday night. Different venues. So only weekend we have off throughout those 17 rounds is Easter weekend. So we're excited about it. Looking forward to next year. Looks like we're going to be going back to the way it used to be before COVID, where we're racing in just a different city every single Saturday. And I'm excited about it.
How different has it been?
It's been a lot different. So when I took this analyst position, we were talking about this at the break, I didn't know really my position as an analyst and play-by-play and what was different. So once I learned that, it was like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
But it's been a challenge, but I've learned so much. You gave me some great advice during the break that I think is not, it means that. Tell me what you can't see. And that's really what my bosses at NBC has told me, you know, like parallel it. Show, you know, so the people that don't know what motocross is, maybe they can get an idea, or supercross, get an idea of what is happening. But it's been fun. Now, I would love to expand. I got the opportunity to call a NASCAR Xfinity race at Darlington this year. I want to be able to expand. I want to do better and better.
Now, you dabbled in the NASCAR arena for a while.
Yep.
Is that something that is, that's rearview mirror all the way now?
Yeah, unfortunately it is, I believe, from a racing standpoint. But if I can get in the booth and NBC is still going to continue to broadcast NASCAR, I would love for that opportunity.
Whenever we talk about people, Grant and I were talking about Urban Meyer struggling at Jacksonville after not hardly ever losing as a college football coach. And the challenge, because he hates losing more than he really got joy of winning.
Yeah, 100%.
Was that your drive through your career? You just did not want to lose?
It's like you know me. Exactly. I hated to lose more than I liked to win. 100%. If I won, it was like, okay, great. If I lost, I was beating myself up as far as, you know, where did I make the mistake? You know, I shouldn't be doing that. I'm better than that. So absolutely. I mean, and I think all great champions, they hate to lose more than they like to win. It's kind of, honestly, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's sad in a way.
Almost a curse?
Yeah. It's almost a curse.
Is there a difference? Because I maintain there is. I think there's a difference. And I've, you know, I don't play anything. I've never played anything at the level that you've achieved in your particular skill set.
Yeah, but you've been around some great
athletes. I have. One of the distinctions that I've noticed as I've listened to and observed is the difference between, it's one thing to be beaten, it's another thing to lose.
Yep.
If you're beaten, you can handle that usually because you did really well. The other guy just did better.
Yep.
Is that true in your world?
100%. And I try
Didn't
to pass this
often,
down.
Though.
If I'm coaching a kid or even my own children, I'm like, listen, do your best. If you just do your best and all you got's a third place, fourth place today, then that's all you got. But what you can't do is be the best and not perform and win. That's unacceptable. So, to your point, absolutely. Getting beat, that's okay if you tried your hardest.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everyone's going to get beat eventually.
So where do you find at this stage in your life the competitive arena?
Well, being on TV and being an analyst and knowing if I had a good race call or missing opportunities on the track when I saw a battle and not being able to explain that present moment to the viewer. It's so frustrating. Like when we go into break, I'm like, I missed that opportunity. That would have been really good. And you never know, that could have been the moment that I captured a new viewer.
Right.
And it drives me nuts when I miss that opportunity. I'm like, can I have it back?
Well, you're welcome here anytime.
Thank you, my man. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Ricky Carmichael, rickycarmichael.com. It's a cool website. You'll have a good time if you visit there. 56 past the hour. We come back. Mary Peter joins us next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. On the Morning Show with Preston Scott. Great to be with you this morning. We're pushing away all of the news noise and talking about things that hopefully lift you up, encourage you, give you outlets to make a difference in people's lives. And that's exactly what my next guest has done. Mary Peter has been on the show a couple of times over the years. She is the founder of K9 Partners for Patriots. And Mary, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Preston, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I I can't wait to have our discussion here today. You're now the Executive Director of Training Operations. But for those that have never heard of Canine Partners for Patriots, take us back. Give us the Cliff Notes version of where this all started for you.
In the very beginning, from my dog training business that I had for the public, I started having veterans show up with a dog because someone told them that a dog would help them with their PTSD. And they had no idea how to pick a dog. They just grabbed a dog. But I saw them trying to adapt, trying to be in a civilian environment. They just had such a difficult time. And I just knew that they needed something just for them. They were unable to handle the civilian environment and too many people around them, and the PTSD issues were high. So I closed my business and founded Canine Partners so that we could do something to make a difference in their lives.
When you and I first met, we had you on the program. You had a handful of relationships started of Canine Partners with Patriots. That has grown remarkably. Tell us about that.
Yes, it has. We originally started with 8 veterans when I founded it, and starting to try to rescue dogs to match with these veterans so that we could save 2. And we are now currently up to 509 active veterans in our program. And we've rescued 184 dogs.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. And the counter to all of that is a very bitter reality, and that is that there are veterans out there that are ending their own lives every single day, Mary.
Yes, and it's getting worse, unfortunately.
The COVID pandemic has made things more challenging because it brings about an enhanced isolation for men and women who are already struggling with that. You have gotten some good news, however, in that it appears as though your program and programs like it are finally getting the attention of those in Washington.
Yes. Yes, we are. We're very, very honored to have had the governor approve funding for us to have a new facility that will be state funded, so we don't have to keep leasing where we are. We'll have a place that's wholly ours, and the veterans will have some place to come to for the rest of their lives. You know, it'll be there as a legacy for veterans that need help. It's just a place of hope and healing. So we're slowly working on property and getting things going. So it'll be in the next year and a half, maybe 2, depending on whether we can get building materials.
Sure.
And get our building up and running so that we can help more veterans.
And then there's Senate Bill 613 that the Senate passed unanimously in August.
The PAWS Act, yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's supposed to have the VA now start being responsible for assisting financially those of us in nonprofit organizations that are training and helping these veterans. And we haven't heard much about it yet. I just know that it's been approved. I don't know what the follow-through is yet or what the procedure is going to be. But it should help eliminate some of the financial stress of our nonprofit organizations trying to do this for the veterans.
Mary Peter with us. Mary, stand by. When we come back, we're going to pick up our discussion right there. She is the founder and now executive director of training operations. As you heard, her expertise training dogs to work with their owners, and now it's taking on a whole new meaning because of a handful of veterans that came across her path, and she felt in her heart a pull to make a difference in their lives. And so we're going to talk more about that with Mary Peter. Canine Partners for Patriots is what you want to look for if you want to find out more. And we'll talk about ways that maybe you can make a difference next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Justice and the American way. Like Superman, only with a microphone. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
It's called Canine Partners for Patriots, and an organization based in Brooksville, Florida. Its mission is to give veterans and active military a second chance by just bringing some help into their life when they're suffering from PTSD and traumatic brain injury and different types of traumas that they might experience. And you're in 39 of the 67 counties, Mary, and that growth in and of itself is amazing.
Yes, it has been, and we've actually had veterans now coming from out of state to attend our program as well. So, yeah, it's just grown exponentially. It's been amazing.
Before we tell veterans that might be interested in learning more what they might ought to do, talk about that rescue part with the dogs themselves. How do you find the animals for this program?
You know, and that's honestly been the most difficult part of what we do, is finding the right dog. We don't breed dogs. We don't house dogs. We interview a veteran when they come in and find what their need is to match the right dog with them. And we work with rescues throughout the Tampa Bay area and the Humane Society's animal shelters, some individual rescues, to adopt their dogs. So that we can save those dogs and we match them with a veteran. But it is very difficult because, as you know, and I've told you the story before, we can test 10 dogs and there may only be two that's going to meet our criteria because we need dogs that can scent adrenaline that can then therefore help veterans wake them up from nightmares and stop their flashbacks and redirect their focus. And there's every dog has the capacity to do it, but not every dog can do it. So that makes it difficult.
Yeah, and you've shared with me that there have actually been incidents where dogs have interrupted a potential suicide.
Yes, yes. We had one veteran in particular, as everybody should know, fireworks are not good for our veterans. The New Year's Eve and 4th of July is very tough. So sometimes to them, it brings them back to a bad place, and it's firearms they hear instead of fireworks. And so I did have one veteran that just wanted not to have to deal with it and thought if he took more medication, he would go to sleep. But when he took too much medication, he started trying to cut his wrist and didn't realize what he was doing. And his dog, which only happened to be a little Yorkie that we trained, started jumping on him and barking in his face. And when he realized what he was doing, he stopped and called 911 for help. And he is alive now because of that little dog.
Are there certain breeds that work better for this type of mission?
You know, not really. It's the nose. I mean, obviously something like a Labrador hound mix that dogs are bred for their noses are good. But any breed from Yorkie on up, we have Yorkies all the way on up to St. Bernards. If they can smell the adrenaline, if they've got the right temperament, then they, you know, we can train them to be a service dog.
Veterans listening right now, I have a lot of vets that listen to the program, Mary. What do you want them to know if they want to find out more about this?
Well, first I want to say God bless you and thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Second thing would be to go to our website if you're interested at caninepartnersforpatriots.com and click on the tab that says Veterans Start Here, and it will walk you all the way through everything you need to know and what the criteria is to be accepted into the program. And fill out an application online, hit the submit button, and we'll take it from there.
Mary, thanks so much for what you're doing, and I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Preston. As always, it's great to talk to you.
Thanks very much. Mary Peter with us this morning from K9 Partners for Patriots. The letter K, the number 9, partnersforpatriots.com. And yes, that's a cause that the Scott family supports, in case you're interested. 16 minutes after the hour. Come back and talk some more here on Spark Week on the Morning Show with Preston Scott.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Dude, yes!
And iHeart's radio station.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on here. Since when did the WWE hold a draft?
What?
Exactly. I'm just going to read the story. Olympic gold medalist Gable Stevenson Stevenson found out which WWE show he will be performing on to start his pro wrestling career. Turns out he will be featured on Monday nights moving forward. Stevenson was selected in the sixth round by Raw in this year's WWE draft.
What?
Stevenson was seen at his home with his parents celebrating getting drafted to Raw. According to WWE, the rosters will be officially finalized after the company's Crown Jewel pay-per-view on October 22nd. The collegiate wrestling star signed a name, image, and likeness deal with the WWE in September. The deal allows Stevenson to attend Minnesota for his senior season and compete for the Division I title while training with the WWE. The company will reportedly set up a training facility near the Minnesota campus.
Oh, no!
Where he will learn to compete in professional wrestling. Who knew?
I don't get it.
That this new image and likeness deal with college athletes
would extend to WWE.
WWE, buddy.
I'm still trying. Okay.
The draft.
The name, image, likeness thing. Okay, I kind of get it. If there's like a college star and WWE wants to go after that, I understand that. I don't understand the draft part. So do they have... I'm not a wrestling guy. I've watched it maybe once or twice. I don't understand how it works. So do they have different drafts for different, like,
dude,
a Monday?
I'm looking at the SmackDown roster headed by Aaliyah and ending with Gia Lee. There's Sheamus in there, Shanky.
Are these people I'm supposed
B-Fab,
to know? What?
Charlotte Flair.
Okay, so these are their names as they're known in the ring.
In Raw, there's AJ Styles. There's Commander Aziz. There's, let's see, Randy Orton. That's a name.
Now, like, that sounds like an accountant.
There's Riddle. Riddle. T-Bar. Big E. Carmella. Chad Gable.
Yeah, once again, I know nothing about this.
This is just too good, buddy. Oh, man. All right.
So what's the guy's, the kid? Is his nickname, does he have a name picked out?
I don't know. There's a bunch of names here, so he's got to be one of them. The Miz? No, he's not The Miz. Sorry. My bad. Veer? Edge? Drake Maverick.
That's a cool name. That's nice.
Dewdrop. Dewdrop.
That's funny.
Dolph Ziggler.
What?
I'm not making this stuff up, man. This is Keith Bearcat Lee.
Nice.
I'm so out of this world. I don't know. There was a time I could have told you a couple of names in the whole WWE world, but just imagine. Gable Stevenson wins a gold medal, but he's going back to college. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
You know, you win a gold as a college junior.
Yeah. Imagine showing up on, like, you're literally the big man on campus. Like, I have a gold medal.
Man. Hey, if you can help out, TallahasseeMensRehab.com is the website. We're helping out Teen Challenge for Spark Week. And whatever God lays on your heart to do to help, this is a building need. The program, they do their job so well. They do what they do so well. But they had flood damage when a retention pond backed up with rainwater for 5 days. And so there's a lot of different things, from gutters to waterproofing, tree removal, pond work, excavation. And, you know, I'm thrilled to say that they got some action on some of that yesterday. But there will always be some cash that's needed, some costs that will be needed to be covered. This whole project, $67,000. I have no idea whether, you know, we're going to raise the funds, whether we're going to just kickstart it, whether we're going to Get some of you in these various businesses. Maybe you own a gutter business and you can help out and donate, because they can offer you a tax credit for it as an in-kind donation. Maybe you can help with the commercial kitchen waterproofing and the materials needed, flooring, tile, that kind of thing. Whatever you can do to help, go to the website, look at it, go to TallahasseeMensRehab.com and check out the Spark Week Challenge link, and you'll learn more there. When we come back, Scott Striplin is Director of Excavations and Chief Archaeologist at Ancient Shiloh, and he joins us next as we talk biblical archaeology on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Listen to your opinions and tell you you're wrong. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Thirty-five minutes after the hour. Good morning. It's Tuesday on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Grant Allen over there, Studio 1A. I am here in Studio 1B. Great to be with you. If you've listened to the program for any measure of time, you know that I will frequently delve into the topic of biblical archaeology, simply because it's so much fun to see the history of the Old Testament literally dug up. Because it's very difficult for skeptics to deal with what there is out there that proves the accounts of history. You know, one of the things that a lot of us that are Christians believe is that the Bible is a history book, as much as it is a book about life and how God wants to interact with us. And so I'm pleased to have with me Scott Striplin. Scott is Director of Excavations, Chief Archaeologist at Ancient Shiloh. And Scott, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it is my pleasure. When you responded in the email request, I was overjoyed that you were willing to come on the program. Let's first talk about how you personally got involved in biblical archaeology. Where did it start for you?
I was a Bible reader. My whole life, I was fascinated with the background of the biblical text. The deeper I got into it, I went through seminary and got ready to do my doctoral work. Nothing really intrigued me other than trying to solve that riddle of the material culture. And I thought that some of the gaps we had in understanding must have to do with our lack of awareness of the ancient culture.
I would say that for an apologist of Christianity, biblical archaeology is one of the strongest evidences out there. Do you concur?
Absolutely. We don't set out, Preston, our goal is not to prove the text. I mean, I believe that the Bible is a historically reliable text, which puts me outside the mainstream of a lot of secular scholarship. But that's what I believe, and I think there are hundreds of synchronisms that prove that. Along the way, it has a powerful apologetic purpose and effect, but that's not what we actually set out to do.
You have been in Shiloh. Explain the interest in that region and specifically what you've been doing.
We've been working in the highlands of Israel for many years at three different archaeological sites. And now we're at kind of the jewel of the Nile at Shiloh, which was Israel's first capital. The Tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant were there for over three centuries. And we're now uncovering evidence of the Israelite sacrificial system there. So it couldn't be any more interesting, and the stakes couldn't be any higher.
What gets your attention? You know, whether it's a discovery that you and your team make, or what you see others are making in other parts of the Middle East, the traditional Holy Lands, what gets uncovered that really catches your attention?
Well, the whole thing is fascinating to me because this is all God's history. It's his story. And we talk about scripture being special revelation and nature being general revelation. But I think we have a third thing to look at, and that's the material culture. So it all fascinates me. But my specific area of research interest is the period of the conquest. So we're talking about from around 1406 down to the period of the Judges. But, you know, everything interests me, including the New Testament periods and post-biblical periods.
Scott Stripling with me. If you want to learn more about Scott, scottstripling.net. You can also go to digshiloh.org. Kind of cool. Dig Shiloh. Right, man. Dig Shiloh. And learn more about that excavation. We'll talk more with Scott next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Featuring Grant Allen.
And you know the story. They said to Lincoln, you can't use him anymore. And his name was Grant. And he went in and he knocked the
on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Taking some time to visit with us this morning is Scott Stripling. And the website, scottstripling.net, director of excavations, chief archaeologist at Ancient Shiloh. And Scott, would it be fair to say that the Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark movies inspired kind of a new wave of interest in biblical archaeology? Scott? Hello? Did we lose you? Uh-oh. We might have lost him. I don't know what happened to him. We'll try. I just hung up on the line there, so you can try getting him back. I don't know if his phone went dead or what happened, but we'll try to get him back on here for a second. I think that people are fascinated by the Ark of the Covenant story. And, you know, the big Bible finds, I think people are kind of interested in. Okay, we got him back. I don't know how we lost you, but we lost you. Scott, good to have you back. I was asking, do you think that the Indiana Jones movies had anything to do with an inspiration of kind of a new generation of interest in biblical archaeology?
Well, funny thing, yes and no. We, as archaeologists, we're nothing like Indiana Jones.
Of course.
Unfortunately, you might say. You know, we're not treasure hunters. We do slow, careful, systematic, scientific work. But as far as capturing the imagination, nothing could be more captivating than the Ark of the Covenant.
And so is that something that is even on your radar as you're going through the excavations? Because you mentioned, you know, the temple and the Ark and so forth. What are you looking for specifically? Are there specific things that you're looking for, or you're just looking and whatever is uncovered is uncovered?
Yes and no. I do have a research focus and research questions, but we are aware that the Bible, which I take as a reliable historical source, says that the tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant and the entire Israelite sacrificial system operated at Shiloh for over three centuries. So we are, in fact, uncovering that sacrificial system. We have a massive bone deposit with a preponderance of bones from the right side of the animal, which is what you read in Leviticus 7. We have a monumental building, which is the exact dimensions of the tabernacle. We have storage rooms with massive storage jars. We have cultic objects, a demolished four-horn altar that we're excavating. So it's a very clear case of verisimilitude, where the material culture matches what we would expect to find when we read the biblical text.
What's the most significant biblical artifact you've held in your hands?
Well, we have ceramic pomegranates from the period of the tabernacle at Shiloh, and that's very interesting because the Bible says that pomegranates hung from the priest's garments. You have bells and pomegranates alternating, and it's a motif of the tabernacle as well as the temple. Solomon's temple had 200 pomegranates that adorned it. So those pomegranates and then the altar horns and the area that we're excavating now appears to have been the Holy of Holies. And so, I mean, when I started out doing this, I never dreamed that I would be excavating the Holy of Holies.
Wow. So just, I've got to get your opinion then. Do you believe that there is somewhere there's a piece of, or it exists, the entirety, the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, I just, you know, I filmed with the History Channel a series on this recently, so I'm going to be a little bit vague in my answers. But
it's just us.
Get me back in a few months. Maybe I could tell you more. Because we're doing a winter project, and after this winter, I should have more certainty. But the bottom line is, we don't know where the Ark of the Covenant is, but we've got some. We're very aware of what the theories are, and we're exploring those.
Scott, it's been a delight to have you with me for a few minutes this morning, and you can bet I will circle back and try chatting with you sometime later on, maybe early spring, and see what you got for us. But thanks for the time today.
Thanks, Preston. You rock. Have a great day.
All righty. Scott Stripling with us. And a tantalizing little tidbit there, huh? Could you imagine? Yeah, there's a building here. It's the exact size of the tabernacle. Yeah. I've been telling you. The Old Testament, it's a book of history.
I'm more impressed the History Channel's doing history, not just ancient aliens.
Yeah, we'll see what they do to destroy all of it, but he'll carry his end, I guarantee you that. 46 minutes past the hour in the morning show. Morning show with Preston Scott. Remember, Spark Week Challenge benefiting Teen Challenge. And if you can help out, go to TallahasseeMensRehab.com if you did not catch the show yesterday. It's based in the capital city, but they take in patients primarily from outside the capital city. You don't take people into a resident program usually in their home ground. Too many patterns that are difficult to break when you're living in the city. And this is a, you know, you volunteer to check yourself into a program like this. They're not made to be there. And so this is a program that reaches to everywhere my voice is reaching right now on the radio. So if you can help out, find out more, just look at the projects and do what you can. It's as simple as going to TallahasseeMensRehab.com. Now, you know, I'm looking at an auction, in fact, right now, and I don't mean literally as we do the show, but I'm following an auction at one of my favorite auction houses that I will occasionally acquire something from. And so I've got an auction that I'm watching right now, but is there anything that you would consider getting through auction? Pieces of history, memorabilia. And I mean, all auctions of note, it's about history. It's about something, whether it's in the arts or whether it's political or whether it's in war or what, something historically valuable to whoever it is that's bidding. So is there a category of something that would ever interest you?
American history pieces or like old muskets.
Mm-hmm.
From the Revolutionary War era, or, I don't know, a Gutenberg Bible, or one of those old, like, original translations, handwritten.
Would it have to be in owned by somebody that is famous?
No.
Just
an item that was used at that time by somebody, whether the story is known or unknown.
Gotcha. This doesn't particularly interest me, and I doubt it would interest you. It would interest you even less. But I found it to be an interesting story. An interview cassette tape of John Lennon and his wife, Yoko Ono.
Yeah.
It's 51 years old, the interview. It happened in 1970. And a couple of kids did Lennon and Ono agreed to do the interview with a couple of kids for what is in essence their high school newspaper.
Wow.
And so they rolled tape as they did this little press conference with them. They recorded him singing along with a traditional Danish Christmas carol. And then he did a song that had never been recorded or produced. And so it's an exclusive song.
So even though I'm not necessarily interested in what John Lennon has to say,
right,
I am well aware that this is probably like unheard of.
Yeah, this is pretty significant. It's a 33-minute recording.
That's huge.
That includes an unreleased song. It has some photographs with it and so forth. I was shocked, though. $75,000. I thought it would go for 10 times that amount. So, anyway, yeah, don't be surprised if you don't hear something about an auction along the way here.
Brought to you by Barino Heating and Air. It's the Morning Show 180 on WFLA.
Yeah, look back at the program in 180 seconds or less. A lot of great guests today. Really good visit. A lot of email on my visit with Leonard Hamilton. I think you'll enjoy listening to that on the podcast if you missed it. Great visit in studio with Ricky Carmichael. Easily the greatest motocross rider of all time. Nothing, no one even close. Tomorrow's theme is starting from scratch. I think you'll enjoy it. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.